Hi, everyone. My name is Jordan Carter from WNZ's Rapporteur for Work Party One. Thank you for attending this call, whether it's morning, noon, or night for you. As you can see from the agenda, we've got one substantive item of business today, which is to discuss the version 2 public comment report content that's been prepared on the incorporation of the OSC reviews into the ICANN bylaws, the University Library and others. Aside from that, we'll finish up at the end with a brief update on volunteers and what we're doing with our next calls on the 6th, on the 8th of July and on the 10th of July. So the first item, though, is a review of the agenda. Are there any other items that people feel we need to discuss today? I don't see any hands up, and in that case, we'll get right on to it. We can add any other things that people come up to in the any other business slot at the end of the meeting. It's my expectation, hope, that this call will not take the full 90 minutes allotted. That was kind of a reserve contingency in case there was a blowout on the list in terms of the debate, but let's see how we go. In terms of the first item number 2 on our agenda, I'd ask the staff to please load the document that was circulated with the agenda into the screen, and then I'm going to ask Steve DelBianco to introduce that content as one of the drafters. So, Stephen and Aubrey, it's up to you between you who you'd like to do the intro. Which of you would like to begin?
It's Steve. And Aubrey, please jump in at any point. Jordan's right, this shouldn't take 60 minutes. This was one of the more straightforward assignments coming out of our first draft, which is to analyze the comment and update our draft to reflect the public comment. And we'll go back later on and explain to in the public comment tool changes that we made. And I said it should be straightforward. There is one element of discussion. We'll save that for the end of our particular session, and that's the discussion of how to compose the affirmation of reviews teams. So to dive right in, the red text is text that I added. I explained a lot of this on the call we had a week ago. The red text I added here is to give context, because this section, section 6.2, is going to be circulated as a standalone section, both to members of our CCWG for their approval, and then later it will be given to attorneys from either side, so that they could prepare bylaws changes. I'll try to adjust the microphone volume. I hope that's better. So the idea here is that the red text is context, so that if somebody hands you this this small document for section 6.2, it'll be apparent where this fits into the greater scheme of things and why it is that the affirmation of commitment is something we want to bring into the bylaws. So we try to explain how it's cancelable by either party. It's a bilateral agreement, and as such, it's the next target for elimination once you eliminate the bilateral agreement of the IANA contract. The blue text on the screen was added by my partner in crime, Aubrey Doria, and she did some edits this weekend, and Aubrey gives the excellent comment there that if, in fact, the AOC has reviews that are underway at the time that we bring these reviews into the bylaws, we've got to be sure that they don't overlap or conflict with each other. And that's a broader topic. It's not part of this bylaws change, but the broader topic of whether the CCWG should recommend that the, for instance, the ATRT review begin now under the affirmation of commitments, or does it wait several months and begin once we have the ATRT brought into the bylaws. And that's not necessarily something we have to decide here and now, but I wanted to make sure that you knew that that's on the agenda as well. So I think you all have...
been here. Can I jump in a second on that one? This is Aubrey speaking. And you did invite me to jump in. I would not want to characterize that sentence there as implying in any way that I think we should delay the ATRT 2 review that is supposed to start in 2016. I just wanted to make sure that that implication wasn't there, that we needed to, my point in writing it the way I wrote it was that any reviews that are ongoing in their own cycle, because at the moment we really, I mean, yes, we have a goal on when we're going to finish, but we don't know when we're going to finish. And so we should be prepping for, in my view, ATRT2 now, and things should run on their own schedule, and then we just have to adjust later. So I really want to make sure that there's no implication in what I wrote that says we should reconsider starting reviews now. Thanks.
Thanks, Aubrey. At the bottom of this page one is additional text where we explain the way in which we're improving or enhancing the ability of these reviews to serve their intended purposes. Again, the red text was what I added, the blue text Aubrey had added. This is not bylaws text. This is explanatory text so that folks understand the kinds of changes we made. And one topic is how were the review team members selected, and we'll get to that in a minute. It's probably better to examine that once we make our way all the way through the document. So if you'll proceed to page two, there's a small discussion on implementation of routines from previous reviews. And this is in response to several public comments who were concerned that we didn't require the board to implement every recommendation that came out of a review team. And in the public comment tool, we explain that there are legitimate reasons that the board may not implement every single recommendation that comes out of a review team, such as whether it's implementable as written or whether the costs are a concern. And in those cases, the board may decide not to implement. If they decided not to implement, we wanted to note to everyone that any aggrieved party or the community itself could file for reconsideration or an IRP process in order to challenge the decision not to implement, to challenge the decision of implementability or costs. And that is then subject to the process that we have in place for reconsideration or the independent review panel themselves, and we can reverse that decision or affirm it in that case. But it's Aubrey and I, at least it's our read, that the CCWG did not want to hard code a requirement that every single recommendation coming out of a review team, and there are four different review teams coming over from the affirmation, that every single recommendation must be implemented by the board. This would be a good time to let us know that any CCWG members differ from that, but that's been the view expressed all along. Alan Greenberg, your hand's up.
Thank you. My hand went up with respect to Avery's original comment on ATRT3. My and just for the record, it doesn't really alter it. My understanding is the board and staff de facto are doing closer to what we're recommending in the future than has been done in the past. ATRT2 started 3 years after the start of ATRT1, essentially giving only 2 years for implementation. And I thought that there, based on Larissa's presentation at the last meet in Buenos Aires, that they were planning to do ATRT3 starting not in 2016 as would have been, but 2017, which essentially is a little closer to what we're recommending. That would be to start it when the recommendations are handed in and giving 3 full years for implementation. So I may have misread what she said, but that was my understanding. So if indeed I'm correct, then ATRT3 is not due to start this coming year, and we shouldn't be doing the prep. But as I said, I may have understood. With respect to the question you just asked, my only thought is, do we want to mention, and we probably don't need to, that the third alternative is they're implementing the intent of the recommendation but using different methodology. And, I suspect it really falls within the broader categories we're already covering there, but I just wanted to mention that.
Thanks, Alan. Aubrey?
Hi. To respond to Alan's point, yes, I believe that some in the staff are trying to push the ATRT 3 out by a year. I personally consider that somewhat illegitimate. I also have happen to, I just believe, let's say, that that the NTIA really does accept that it is starting in 2016 unless we negotiate something different with them. And I am, and you'll notice one of the blue edits in this is I am not in agreement with the end to beginning timing as opposed to beginning to beginning timing, that the 3-year gap is supposed to be beginning to beginning. So I don't think we're there yet insofar as Alan saying we have decided that we are doing beginning to beginning scheduling, because I'm certainly not there yet. Thanks.
Yeah, just for the record, in that case, I think we're way overdue on the next who is. I don't remember when it started, but I'm sure it's all.
That's true, and that's a problem.
Yeah. All right. It may not be a problem for how we write the new bylaws, but it might be a problem nonetheless. Jonathan Zook?
Yeah, thanks. Jonathan Zook for the transcript. Just to clarify, I guess I'll come in and agree with Aubrey about the state of affairs. There's a proposal by staff to push out some of the reviews that's currently up for public comment, and the public comment period has been extended. Mathieu proposed a CCWG comment on that proposal, and my understanding of our processes at ICANN is that absent some consensus in the public comment that the reviews would probably go on as scheduled and not be changed according to the plan made by the staff, although I'm not sure exactly how that would work. But I agree with Aubrey that it's not a decision that's been made. That said, I wonder if we need to schedule a conversation, and maybe it's a subcommittee of the CCWG, and then maybe it's not a work party one. That's why I didn't want to just interject, Jordan. But I feel like the volunteer burnout issue is very real, and I feel like this issue and the likelihood of some overlap and conflict and the fact that the implementation is still going on for ATRT2 suggests that moving some things out does make sense. So I disagree with Aubrey on that, although I know that Aubrey's point is about the level of preparation and research and the gathering of materials that could happen in a kind of non-obtrusive way. I continue to be concerned about the notion of using review teams as the motivation to implement old recommendations, and would love to find an alternative to that. But I feel like there's an opportunity here to get this cleaned up through the accountability process that I think is on a deadline, and we should seriously consider the staff proposal to move things out in order to have a clean transition. But I know, Aubrey, I know you disagree, but I wonder if it's something the CCWG should focus on with its own call or a little working group or something like that, a subgroup, because it remains an open issue. Thanks.
Thank you, Jonathan. Aubrey and Alan, you're in the queue, but let's please just have a very abbreviated discussion on the scheduling of the affirmation reviews that are already in the affirmation of commitment. That's not relevant to the bylaws text on how the reviews will be folded into the bylaws in the future. Certainly important, and I appreciate all of you weighing in, but it doesn't affect the task in front of us and the document you have in front of you. Go ahead, Aubrey, and then Alan.
Yes, Steve. Thank you very much for that comment. And, in fact, that's the reason I wrote the thing as I did, stating that it was an implementation detail to be dealt with later. Essentially, we just need to be careful later that we're doing it. It wasn't until you brought up the whole open comment period on pushing things out that I bothered to speak at all. I was willing to just leave it as an implementation detail. And I would like to just, while we're on the subject, remind you, they didn't even mention ATRT in their recommendation at all. Thank you.
Alan?
No, I lowered my hand at this point, just for the record. My understanding is ATRT 3 was not in the list of ones they said would start in 2016 if we made no changes. So as if the philosophical change was already made, but I don't know that for a fact, and I think we're going down a rabbit hole of talking what it should be today. Thank you.
Hey, thanks, Alan. All right, folks, let's get back to the document, and we get to the first part of the chapeau, which applies to all four of the reviews. And the first one in here, I wonder whether our text is clear enough. This is on page 2 of 8, if you're following along with the Adobe, the proposed bylaws text, on an annual report on the state of improvements to transparency and accountability, where ICANN is responsible to create an annual report that details the status of implementation on all reviews defined in the section. That will help review teams who would have had the burden of looking back to see what's been implemented and what hasn't. It shifts that to ICANN and staff on an annual basis as opposed to every 3 or every 5 years as we planned in this one. So I think it's a great idea. I still support the idea. The question is this language specific enough that the lawyers for either side can turn them into bylaws language that fits with the degree of specificity that ICANN already has in the bylaws for the structural reviews? And I note that it is not very specific text. It is of this nature, of broad requirements for reports and recommendations. Is there anyone who feels we need to tighten this language, or is it good the way it is? I'll take a cue on that. Jonathan, your hand's up.
Sorry, old hand.
Okay. All right, so let's go to page 3. As we move down, page 3 is more of the chapeau, which applies to all the reviews. And you'll see in the center right here, on the center of page 3, is this discussion that Aubrey and I have been going back and forth on, and Alan, Greg, Everhart, a number of you have weighed in on the discussion of how specific we want to be at specifying the number of people in a review team and where they come from, their decision-making methods, and whether voting is ever required if consensus cannot be found. And I'm going to ask your indulgence that we come back to that after we finish the rest of this document, because that's really the meat of the discussion. Most of the rest of this document should be a slam dunk, but we'll come back to this discussion. And I want to remind everyone that when we put out our public comment on May the 3rd, we did not specify exactly how this team was comprised. In other words, we adopted the affirmation of commitments language, which had no specific requirements for the quantity of review team members from each ACNSO. Instead, it left it all to the GAC and ICANN board chair to select candidates. We have turned that upside down to say that the GAC and the board chair do not select the candidate. The ACNSOs do. And in keeping with what Aubrey had on page 1, we believe the community should drive who's part of it, but we still have to decide whether we want to put constraints on the quantity of people in there to assure diversity, to assure representation of some of the subgroups that live in the incredibly detailed GNSO constituencies. And please indulge me. We'll come back to that. On page 3, we have this discussion on to facilitate transparency and openness. We want the review teams to have access to ICANN's internal documents. That's new. It's not in the affirmation of commitments. Now, the board, in its comments to us, was very concerned about sensitive or confidential personnel information that, while they would be willing to share with a review team, would not want it to be relayed to the general public. So what I put in the red text there was a statement to the effect that we would agree not to disclose sensitive or confidential information. But I don't think we want to simply rely upon ICANN's general counsel to indicate what they think is confidential. That raises a little bit of a concern because I don't know how it is we would determine what is confidential. But I'd love to take a cue on this one. Do we want to add the red text for the board's request or leave it unsaid as to what is confidential? Any thoughts on that? Alan?
I think if you're going to say review teams get access to confidential information, I think you have to have something like that. I mean, you have to have it in practice. Whether you can be silent here and not have someone file a review request because the staff deigned to say they must keep something confidential is the question. So I'm not sure whether we need it, but we certainly need it. I'm not sure whether we need it, but we certainly need it. don't know where that's coming from. I hope it's not from me. I would even have gone farther and said...
Are you
out of the lawnmower at this point? Steve, I can't hear you. I don't know about anyone else.
I can hear you fine.
All right, Alan. Are you mowing your lawn at this point?
No, I have one more thing to say. I would have gone further, in fact, and said that there may be some things which the whole review team will not be made privy to, but will be released to a subset of the review team, you know, the chairs or something like that. There are certainly examples where by making something available to 30 people or 25 people, you're making it available to the world regardless.
All right. Okay, thank you. And then go to Jordan. And let's keep in mind that there are independent document transparency requests that happen outside of the reviews. This is only with respect to document access that occurs within a review team. Jordan?
Thanks, Steve. I support the wording that you've got there as appropriate to consult the community on in our second public comment report. And to prepare draft bylaws as well. I think that there may be things that need to get raised confidentially in the course of one of these reviews, but given what the reviews are reviewing and their overall impression, I don't think that it's the case that this will be creating a rod for our own back. You know, I think it's okay for confidential information to be shared confidentially that helps illustrate a point or that helps demonstrate why a change needs to be proposed or not proposed. That's all fine. It seems to make sense to me. And we'll get pushback from the community if people don't like it. So, thanks.
Thanks, Jordan. Even if the community likes it, it may be that ICANN's lawyers or our lawyers will come back and say, well, what do you mean by should not be an ICANN sole discretion? Do we have to lay out a process for how confidentiality is determined? And so we opened a little Pandora's box, but I appreciate your support for the draft language there. Aubrey?
Yeah, hi, thanks. Aubrey speaking. Yeah, in fact, I mean, in TRT 2, we already did go through this situation once where we did get some confidential information where a subgroup did self-form of people that basically said we were willing to hear it but not discuss anything but the outcomes that came of our discussions on it. And while we didn't sign an NDA, as it were, we did take a verbal NDA on those issues, and I don't think any of us have discussed them, even to the point of saying what the issue necessarily was. So I think that, yes, I think we need some mechanism. I don't know that we need to go in more detail. I was tempted to add words to this, saying something like what I just blathered, but more concisely, but in the end didn't. But I think we might, you know, want to take that one step further and say in cases where information does need to be kept confidential, you know, and then this last time it was a discussion between the staff and the ATRT on the demand for information, and we came up with mutually the way to do it. So that's why not at their full discretion is reasonable that it's there. It needs to be in cooperation with the review team, and perhaps we do need another sentence there. Thanks.
Thanks, Aubrey. So the situation that you made us aware of, the actual example, would have been accommodated in this text. I realize it was a sub-team and not the entire review team, but it did capture the issue of an agreement. It doesn't have to be in writing, but if it was an agreement and it was not in ICANN's sole discretion, we could say that the red text is pretty close to what has happened before. But you're right, we may need more language on that. The next paragraph gets to the notion of the draft output of the review, and that's both the review conclusions as well as the recommendations have to be published for public comment, and that we will consider public comment and amend the review as we determine appropriate. On this particular paragraph, one of the public commenters, the government of Spain, was very keen to say that the review team reports and recommendations should indicate the degree of consensus and should indicate how they have decided to respond to public comments. And our text here doesn't say all that, and yet if it's an understanding that we have in terms of moving to a culture of accountability, do folks think we should add a requirement in this chapeau that the review team recommendations and reports should indicate the degree of consensus and that the review team should publish a response to the public comments? Take a cue on that. This, again, this is from the government of Spain. Alan?
I guess I feel that you have to give the review team a little bit of flexibility on this. Time constraints coupled with the difficulty sometimes of responding specifically to comment by comment make that really, really difficult. I think it's mandatory that all comments must be taken into account and discussed. Whether we can give feedback on them one by one, I think, is a little bit problematic, and I'd give a little bit of wriggle room.
Alan, you would say that I think I would agree with you that we could add a line that our report should indicate the degree of consensus achieved, but that we would not necessarily add a line that we had to publish a response to every single public comment. And I would put myself in agreement with you on that.
Yeah, and I'm not sure
any other hands on this
specific in any case.
Alan, would you think the bylaws should it be specific to indicate that the report include the degree of consensus?
Yes.
Okay, got it. Any others on this? All right, so we would, I think we would conclude to give Spain the consensus point, but not the point on responding to each and every public comment, and I can add that. Thank you. Let's go to the next page. This gets to the very first review, the ATRT, the Accountability Transparency Review, of which two of which have already happened. Alan and Aubrey have been very experienced in working on both of those. The first change we made was that this A through E list used to say that it was this review, particular attention should be paid to, and it was a comment from the ALAC who suggested that that was limiting and that we should make a more flexible indication that these topics may include, but not must include. And so we changed the wording to issues that may merit attention and review include. And that's to make it abundantly clear this is not a requirement that this and only this list needs to be in there. We also made a change in red that the review team shall assess the extent to which prior review recommendations have been implemented. If you recall from the AOC itself, the ATRT team had the unenviable task of checking on all four review team previous recommendations. And it was a number of public commenters who thought that that was too high a bar. And I believe that what we're trying to do here is to say that each review team assesses the extent to which its previous review team's recommendations have been implemented. And even that task should be made much easier because of the Accountability and Transparency Report that ICANN would have to publish once a year. You recall we covered that in the previous chapeau, because if ICANN has to publish a status report on the implementation of previous review teams, that makes it much easier for a review team to catalog which have been implemented and which have not, even though it may decide to differ from the interpretation that staff have. The next one is a brand new requirement.
Yep. Steve, it's Alan. In the red text, it says, to the extent to which prior review recommendations, given that this is the first review, do we need to qualify that we're talking about accountability and transparency review as opposed to all review recommendations?
Thank you, Alan. On the remainder of the four reviews, we use the same language to say prior review recommendations, implying that it was just the review in this subsection.
Okay.
You're the lawyer here. If you think we need more specific language, we'd be happy to do that.
Yeah, the only reason is in the past, the ATRT did have that requirement.
Right, and I noted that earlier, and we're looking to relieve them of that burden.
Yeah.
So it might say this subsection or this review. Help me come up with a word on that and send it to me offline, but I think we all understand what the intent is.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
I'll look
just
at it again.
Just see the very same line repeated for each of the next three reviews. So probably want to make it consistent if we can. Okay. The next paragraph on page four is the idea that the ATRT has a special new responsibility to recommend the termination of the other three reviews, including the ATRT, and it can recommend additional reviews. This is to give some degree of flexibility and permanence to the idea of these reviews so that in the future, for instance, the WHO's review might go away or be replaced by a review of directory services. So as such, there were several public comments that indicated concern that an ATRT could simply terminate and there would be no opportunity for public comment. And I wanted to make two observations on that, and we did so in the earlier section. The recommendation to terminate or start a new review, first of all, goes out for public comment. Second, if the board accepts or denies, that decision is subject to review and challenge. And third, if they were to eliminate or add a review, it becomes an addition to the bylaws. When they get added to the bylaws, they are also subject to community challenge for a bylaws change. So there are three opportunities for the community to get in the way of a review team's deciding to terminate a review or start a brand new review. And I feel like with those three opportunities for the community to comment on it, that we have enough safeguards here, and then we can leave this text as is. I'm happy to take a cue on that. Anybody differ? Great. Thank you. Now we get to the topic of Aubrey added the blue text that the review team should complete its review within 1 year. So putting a shot clock on the review team. Aubrey, I'd like to turn it over to you to explain your thinking behind that. There's no such requirement in the current affirmation of commitments, and this wasn't part of our public document in May. Go ahead, Aubrey.
Okay, thanks. This is Aubrey speaking. Actually, on the ATRT, too, and this is one of the ambiguity on the ATRT, rather, is one of the ambiguities that perhaps comes up in the reading of the AOC. It gives a very specific deadline of 1 year later for the first ATRT. And I have, and I think others perhaps have, taken that to include a one-year period on that. One reason that I would argue for it, whether it was there historically or not, though I believe it's there historically already, is that a review like accountability and transparency can be infinite in scope. It can continue to dig and dig and dig. Confining it within a year and having a strict schedule of repetition both keeps it bounded and allows you to do the periodic check. So this is why I accompany this with some of the other recommendations I make lower about it, you know, the beginning-to-beginning nature of this review. Also the fact that we've seen frequently, and this is a normal organizational and human tendency, a lot of the things don't get done until the last year anyhow, and this is a personal bet. Whether it's 3 years or 5 years, I bet we still waited until the last year to get most things done, and therefore, but you know, I'm not arguing against the new five-year cycle that we're recommending instead of the current three. But basically, it's bounding the time of an ATRT review, I think, is was originally recommended, and I think it remains a good idea because of the infinite or indefinitely large nature of the subject. Thanks.
Hey, thanks, Aubrey. Alan?
Thank you. I support the current wording. I'll note ATRT2, in fact, decided largely due to pressure from both the chair and the NTIA to complete by December 31st, even though we didn't start until, if I remember correctly, mid-March. So this gives more time than ATRT2 had, regardless. You know, if it starts late, then it ends late. I'm a little concerned about, is the word initiation defined? And, you know, it's like with the PDP, is initiation when we start talking about it or when we actually sit down to work. So that we may want to go back and look at and see whether that definition is clear. But I'm happy with one. with 1 year. I'll note the Who Is review team took about a year and a half to do its work. Whether that was an issue of the vast amount of work to do for the first one or something else, I don't know.
Thanks, Alan. Seeing no other names in the queue, I should just ask, since this is a new requirement, are there any objections to the inclusion of the blue text on the one-year goal? And any objections? You can speak up if you're only on the bridge.
It's Alan. My only not objection but question is, do we define initiation or leave it undefined? Leaving it undefined is fine. If we defined it somewhere, you know, as prior to when the review team actually meets, I find that problematic.
Aubrey, since you wrote the original text, do you have a way to solve Alan's problem on the word initiation? And we're definitely not going to define initiation. So
yeah, if it's not defined, I have no problem.
I wouldn't define initiation. I'm more than willing to suggest changing it to, you know, from when measured from the date the and you're talking about this initiation. Yeah, from the selection of the final selection of the members, so I could replace initiation from 1 year from the final selection of the members.
May I suggest a one word change of change initiation to convenes?
Sure thing, works for me.
All right, so within 1 year of convening.
Yeah.
Okay? Great, thank you. Next line gets to the issue of how frequently they occur. Aubrey indicated no problem with the idea of every five years, but on all four of the reviews, we published identical language. In all cases, we said the periodic review should be conducted no less frequently than every 5 years, measured from the date the board received the final report of the prior review team. So we were measuring the 5 years no less frequently. It can be more frequently, right? You can do it every year if we wanted to, and we had volunteers. But you can't let more than 5 years pass from when you handed the board the last ATRT to when you need to begin the next one. And they're all worded the same. And Aubrey in blue text is suggesting changing the beginning date for when they should go. Now, Greg, I saw your hand pop up and down, and I'm very sorry that I missed that. If you want to get back in on a previous topic, Greg, let me know. I don't see your hand popping back up. So, Aubrey, if you wish to explain your view on changing the shot clock on the five-year delay, go ahead.
Okay. Partly it has to do with various comments we've gotten about some things being too far apart and 5 years being too late. And perhaps I should have changed it in the chapeau text as opposed to just here, or I should at least have changed the chapeau text to include the clause unless specified elsewhere, because then I was going ahead and specifying elsewhere. So at least that change I should have made that I didn't make. Again, it's in the nature of the accountability review, and effectively this redefines 5 years, at least in my mind, to mean 6 years or more. Now, by limiting it to a year, you know, okay, we're limiting it to 6 years from start to start. But I actually think our whole, you know, 5 years from when the report is given is actually a mistake, and I think that we see that in some of the comments. I don't think we got any comments saying 5 years is too quick, so that we would want to stretch it further. And I do think we've got quite a few concerns about stretching things out too long. And again, in terms of looking at all of them, while I think all of the special subject ones are interesting, but their interest is in a sense more ephemeral. Different subjects will be different, will be needed for the review at different points in ICANN's history. That's why we're changing, you know, putting in the ability to cancel and initiate new AOC-type reviews. but I think that the ATRT has a it's almost the pacemaker for the reviews. It's the one that comes and says, "Is are reviews being treated properly? Are they in general being both done and implemented and everything as the community thinks they should be?" So it really provides the rhythm and the true accountability of the whole process. And so that's why I think stretching to 5 years is problematic, but I'm willing to go along with that personally. And I think that the community seems willing to go along with that, even if there was some concern. But I think stretching it longer by doing an end-to-beginning scheduling puts in another year that we just shouldn't be doing at this point. Thanks.
So, Aubrey, just to make it clear, this is a change that would say that you measure the 5 years from beginning to beginning as opposed to end to beginning. And I'll take it that you believe that if we made that change here, we'd make it for all four reviews, so that the 5 years is really 5 years. And in keeping with the previous, we could say the word was convened instead of initiated, because initiated is undefined. We could say convened. Okay, so I take it, and that's what I would rather get. I would rather get everybody's view on the general point that all four reviews should be 5 years measured from beginning to beginning, rather than
that
from end.
That wasn't the recommendation I was making, but I'm fine with that recommendation.
Okay, and to keep things consistent and to keep them simple, that would be my goal here. Alan?
Thank you. I tend to support Avery. The 5+1 is essentially doubling what we have practiced until now, and I think that's a bit excessive. I would even support putting language in, but it may be coming too complex to say they should typically be 3 years from the submission or 4 years from convening, but could be extended to five or something like that. Since an ATRT can recommend the abolishment of the future ATRTs, presumably you can also recommend a change in timing, which is a far less onerous change. And in any case, these are only bylaws, and bylaws can be changed. So I would support what Avery is saying, convening the 5 years.
Right, and to make it clear, we would probably change the word to convene. The periodic review shall be convened no less frequently than every 5 years measured from the date the previous review was convened.
That sounds
so. We use the word convene.
Sounds actually clear.
Okay. Anyone else in the queue on this? All right, seeing none, are there any objections to changing all four reviews so they go from beginning to beginning with a 5 years? Same text, convened to convened. Any objections? Great. Seeing none, let's move on to the next page, which will be page 5. There's only a few things on here. This is the security, stability, and resiliency, and I see no changes on this particular page. The only one we would have is the change to the text we just made on the 5-year cycle. The next page is promoting consumer trust, competition, and consumer choice. This is a review of new GTLDs. This particular review hasn't been conducted yet. The first one is scheduled to begin later this year. Now, there was a couple of public comments that explained concerns that the first line of each of these reviews is a commitment. It starts with the word ICANN will ensure that it, as it expands, that it will adequately address. And that is a commitment. And that commitment in all four cases, was supposed to make its way to the core values on paragraph 107. In this particular case, it was the business constituency that pointed out that most of the last sentence was left out of the core values text. And that public comment has been turned over, but I imagine that's work party two. So I'll look for your help, staff, and your help, Jordan, to be sure that the work party in charge of the core values picks up the malicious abuse issues, sovereignty concerns, and rights protection, because we need to bring all of that over from the affirmation, not just the first three words. Any comments on that? It's not a change to our section. It's only a change to a different section. Great. Thank you. And then there was a couple of questions.
Steve,
I'm sorry,
I have.
Go ahead, Alan.
Yep. My only concern is, and maybe it's completely something that will never happen. If we ever get to the point where we can actually do rounds a lot more frequently, this doing it a year after each batch may be onerous. But I'm not sure. I think we're maybe so far away from that we don't need to worry about it.
Yes, and Alan, I explained this in some of the reaction to public comments, where the word batch definitely threw some people. And what I use that word deliberately because there is at least a discussion earlier at ICANN of having new TLD window be open continuously. And if it were open continuously, this one-year thing doesn't really apply anymore. And then you just end up with a every five-year review of the continuously open window of new gTLD applications. But if, in fact, we do them in batch rounds, because we publish a brand new guidebook and do an open window that closes after a period of time, then that batch creates the one-year trigger review.
Well, my concern is we do something in between, and instead of saying contiguous, saying we receive applications in the month of January every year, at that point they're batched, but they're annual. That's the scenario that I worry about our wording for.
Do you have a solution? We could take this requirement out and just say every 5 years, but I have a feeling there's plenty of ICANN stakeholders who believe that after a new guidebook and a new round is closed, a year after they're in operation, is the perfect time to review not only the consumer trust and choice and competition, but how well the evaluation and application process work.
Mm-hmm. In other places, we use should as a softer word than shall. We may want to consider that here.
All right. Jordan Carter?
We don't need to solve that problem here. We know the current tempo of these rounds. If it goes continuous, we can fix this bylaw. I think it stands fine as it is for this purpose, for this consultation.
All right. Thank you, Jordan. No other comments on this page. Let's go to the very next page, which is the review of who is and directory services. I note that we changed the title to say who is / directory services to make it clear that we don't think this has to apply only to the who is service. Nonetheless, the board of directors wrote us expressing concern that it would be not clear to lock in who is. Well, I think that we replied to the board in our public comment tool explaining that it says who is / directory services and leave it at that. A line that was added, I believe, by Aubrey or Matthew Shears is the third paragraph down, and it said that existing policy includes the requirements of legal constraints regarding privacy as defined by the OECD in two particular years. There was a public comment that we got from the IPC saying that OECD guidelines do not have the force of law, so they are not legal constraints. So, Aubrey, if you're prepared to respond to that here, please do so. Otherwise, we should take it offline and do it with a very specific targeted email discussion as to whether this is really worded properly. Aubrey or Greg, either of you want to weigh in on that?
This is Aubrey. It was several of us that ended up putting it in. I don't remember who actually wrote the final text. It might have been me, but it was on behalf of certain groups. And it was from, you know, as I said, it was in the previous version. I think that we are not stating that this is binding. It is just part of the body of international expectations that many of our countries, et cetera, have agreed to, and that, you know, we should be taking into consideration. So I have no problem rewording it if need be to indicate that, by the way, this is not legally binding on any particular country unless, of course, they've signed a treaty on it. And you know, I would need to go back and check to what degree any of the OECD things have ended up being accepted as binding, have been taken in by any of the governments. But you know, I'm willing to argue that it's not binding. I don't think anyone argued that we should take it out. You know, rewording it to give wiggle room for those that you know, are concerned about too much privacy is fine with me.
So it potentially could be worded, existing policy includes guidelines regarding privacy as defined by OECD. So take out all of the requirements, the legal constraints, just say guidelines regarding privacy. Potentially that. Think about that for a minute. I'll let Greg go.
Potentially that might be softer than I'm happy with, but let's talk about it in a smaller group if we need to.
All right. Greg, go ahead, please.
Yeah, it's Greg, and I apologize that I'm not all that familiar with this language from our comment, but I know first that the sentence actually is doesn't hang together grammatically, and I guess the question is whether, you know, by doing this we're somehow binding ICANN to the OECD privacy principles without any substantive review of those principles or a discussion of those. They are not global principles. They're, as I understand it, more aligned with the EU principles, which is not necessarily a bad thing or a good thing, but it seems like we're kind of, you know, sneaking in a privacy, what could become or be considered an ICANN, you know, privacy commitment without any real discussion or review. And, you know, I'm looking at this, I'm, you know, I tend to be concerned. I mean, maybe so that it seems to me that this is something that needs further discussion rather than just kind of coming in here in the avalanche of things that have kind of been added in that were not in the AOC, unless I'm missing something in this that was in the AOC, but I don't think so.
It's not, Greg, but I mean, I think it's a little unfair to call this an avalanche. These were first discussed in March. They were published in May, and the IPC gave a very well-argued concern about the word legal constraints, and I've reflected that here in the hopes of taking the word legal constraints out. So this is the time for us to discuss this. And there was only, I believe, one public comment. I'll go back and check on that. And the public comment was well argued by the IPC. So taking it out or changing it to softening it are things we probably need to discuss, and probably in a subgroup if we hope to get to the meaty issue in front of us on the composition of the team. Alan is next in the queue, but Alan, I don't think we're going to resolve this right now. We probably need to go back and forth on the language for this, and I am also curious about what it means when this says such existing policy. The existing policy, I think, refers to existing policy at ICANN, not existing policy in the actual OECD countries. So this is a statement to say that ICANN's policy should include guidelines from the OECD, and that is a new imposition that's not in the affirmation, but it is something we did publish in May. So, Greg, I should give you a chance to come back on that if you wish, and then Alan. Greg?
Yeah. Whether or not the full implications of this were contemplated by all parties, and I think looking at it now, it seems to be, as you say, it's imposing a new requirement, which I don't believe has been, and it's stating it as if it were existing policy, and which seems a little bit odd if it's not, in fact, existing policy. So if we're attempting to impose a policy that has not been, you know, fully reviewed as key ICANN policy, and then calling it existing policy, whether this was published in March or in 1776, I don't care. I think it looks like something that is being kind of that really is a significant change, and really needs to be, you know, properly examined. You know, we're essentially adding an entire external document, which you know, unless this has been a commitment of ICANN up to this point, you know, is really a you know, could be a significant change in ICANN's approach to privacy, and by kind of putting it in here and only in relationship to, but you know, through affirmation of commitments review, essentially saying that this now is what ICANN is committing to, and in fact already had committed to because it's existing policy, it seems rather tortured to me at best, and I'm not going to ascribe any, you know, I'm sure this was all done in good faith, but in nonetheless, I think it's, while it's fairly modest on the page, it's quite revolutionary in practice. Maybe that wasn't fully recognized by all parties, but I think that before we impose significant privacy policy on ICANN, that it you know, needs to be dealt with in more than just a sentence in a bylaws change like this. This is not a small deal. This is a big deal. Thanks.
Right, but everything in here is subject to applicable laws. That's verbatim, the first sentence of the paragraph above. And if there are applicable laws guaranteeing privacy of individuals, and those laws are respected by ICANN when they create waivers to registrar identification requirements. So we certainly have applicable laws, but the OECD guidelines probably don't rise to the level of laws. And so I think we're going to have to go to a subgroup on this, or we will not get our talking done. I already know who's in the subgroup. It's anyone who wants to be, but at a minimum, it'll include Aubrey, Greg, and Alan. Alan, you're next in the queue, but let's keep it short, and we'll get back to the other topic. Thank you.
I will keep it very short, and I think we're going down a rat hole here of trying to discuss the substance, as has been pointed out to me several times. This is just for another document going out for public comment. It's not the final version. All I wanted to say, however, was I think the current wording is problematic because the previous paragraph starts with ICANN commits to enforcing its existing policy and then wraps this into it. So that, I think, is problematic, and I think it could be fixed by using the word consideration of the guidelines or something like that. Thank you.
All right, and Aubrey, we'll need you to come back. The words "such existing policy" does create a concern, because if it isn't policy, does that sentence suggest that it must suddenly be policy? And that's not something I think we can do in a bylaws adoption, bringing things over from the affirmation. Let's find another way to phrase it so that it becomes a consideration, that the guidelines become a consideration, as opposed to implying that suddenly the OECD guidelines are and always have been ICANN policy, because I don't think we can make that claim, I think, as Greg and Alan have pointed out. So we'll have to cover this in another section. The very last page is the actual IANA functions review. And I will confess, not knowing enough about the IFR, and I'm very reticent to have at it and change any of the text that came over from the CWG. We need more help from folks like Aubrey, who've been part of both teams, and there are probably others of you on the call, who were part of the CWG, to ensure that we have the right words here, because this is going to become a fundamental bylaw. So some of the changes we made in terms of how you measure the five-year cycle from beginning to beginning, for instance, the idea of access to documents, all of those chapeaus that we've discussed would apply to the IANA function review as well. And I want to be sure that we make the CWG happy with how we've reflected their words. Is there anyone who can help do an outreach? Jordan, I agree. I hope that it does reflect what they need. And Aubrey, thank you for that, Aubrey. Could you just do a double check to see if there are any changes they would like to see in that particular page? Thank you. So let's, Aubrey, you're in the queue, but and then we'll go back to the section on review team. Go ahead, Aubrey.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I'm certainly willing to do it. I'll take the paragraph back to the CWG, though the report is obviously already out, and so that won't change. But as the person that was the editor on the IFR in the CWG, I'm fairly confident that we are meeting those requirements, but I will double check.
Hey, thanks, Aubrey. I'm relieved that you're confident. That means we're close. Okay, great. All right, so folks, if you go back to the first page on the chapeau for how we do teams, and I should have said second page. It is actually page 3 on the All Review Chapeau, Options for Consideration. Page 3, where it says Options for Consideration. The affirmation reviews were silent on how many folks were available from each ACNSO, and we've had a robust debate about how to accommodate diversity, as well as the need to pick up the fact that in places like the GNSO, we have multiple constituencies comprising the commercial stakeholders group and the non-commercial stakeholders group, and those constituencies have sufficiently different interests that members of those constituencies often want to be participants on a review team. And we have to account for the fact that if we flooded a review team with lots of people from the GNSO, would that suddenly bias the way that the review team comes up with its recommendations? And this might be a review team of very general ICANN matters, such as ATRT, or security and stability. So let's consider these two options for consideration, and we may not be able to conclude the discussion on this call, but it would be good to sort out where we are. The red text was from me, where I indicated that multiple volunteers could come from each ACSO, and that could cover individual stakeholder groups and constituencies. And then I wrote that if, in fact, we did a consensus call on a report or recommendation, that we would try to equalize that voting among the participating ACs and SOs, and that equalized voting would mimic the community powers voting between each of the ACs and SOs. So that was my proposal. Avery came up with the proposal in blue. I know Greg and Alan and others have commented on it all in various email messages over the past 2 days. Let's go to Avery first and then Alan.
Hi, Aubrey speaking. Yeah, so the point that at first I was willing, you know, I had agreed with Steve on the 5 from each, and, you know, that reflected a number that perhaps wasn't too big, although does start getting big for some of these review teams, but it was that. But once we started to have the discussion, and first I should explain my let's not be so GNSO-centric. And that comment has to do, and perhaps it's because I'm not participating in this as a member from the GNSO, but from a larger AOC, ATRT type of perspective, that we need to look at the needs. The GNSO is very visible in its subdivisions. Other groups aren't necessarily as visible in there, but once you start talking to about it, you start to see the regionalization come out. You start to see the multilingual aspects of people within the groups, you know, demanding their stakeholder rights, even if they haven't been constructed into what GNSO calls a constituency. So taking a sort of high-level view and says that we cannot gear the number of people that are on these things to one group. So there is the possibility of basically, and I think that this is the one that Steve suggested, of normalizing votes. And so it's like, it doesn't matter how many people you have, you know, you get 3 votes. And you subdivide them up into 10 any way you want to. And that normalization of voting is okay, but I think it emphasizes the voting a little too much. And we have been developing through these two processes, started developing in some of the AOC reviews before, but we've certainly developed through these two CWG and CCWG processes sort of a way of working with participants, those that really wanted to participate, participating, and us trying to reach consensus on that, but also needing a backstop of members that we could go to if we couldn't reach a consensus. And also, I admit, using a computer science method that anything you can't solve easily at one level of abstraction, just add another. One of the things we lost in, and this sounds perhaps a little strange, in not having the chair, the two chairs or the CEO and chair of GAC do it, is that making sure that we've got distribution, making sure we've got a full skill set, making sure that we've got proper diversity in the members group, the core group that are actually responsible for doing the work. And that's really the difference between the members and the participants. The participants all get to participate. It's the members that are really responsible for, at the end of the day, making sure that there's a recommendation, making sure that there's some sort of finality to the process. So that was one of the reasons for saying, how do you keep diversity? How do you allow all the constituencies that, A, want to participate, and, B, want members to basically put members forward, and yet still have the constituencies and the stakeholder groups and the ACs, basically the ACs and the SOs, be the ones that are determining who sits on that. So basically replacing the function that was held in the AOC practice of the chair and the vice chair doing it with the chair of the participating ACs and SOs being the ones that take the 100 candidates and pare it down to a maximum of 21. And the reason I put participating stakeholder groups is because I'm not absolutely sure, and we've seen this before, that every ACSO wants to participate in every review. And so that was that. So coming up with a fixed number that was small, that was determined by the ACs, SOs themselves, but was also shaped for diversity and skill set, is the reason I offered it the way I did. Thanks.
Thanks, Aubrey. I want to note that the sentence above the options is, quote, the group must be as diverse as possible, quote. That is new. That is not in the affirmation of commitments. It says nothing about diversity there. It may be a practice that the board and GAC chair have endeavored to fulfill, and it was added as we brought over the reviews into the bylaws. So that diversity requirement is above there, and there are ways to meet the diversity requirement, and you and I are debating the red versus the blue text to get there. All right, this discussion has to end at 22 minutes past the hour, so we have 12 more minutes. Alan Greenberg and then Greg.
First, a question. What page is the diversity statement on?
It's on page 2, Alan. At the very top of the page, 2, you'll see the black text. The group must be as diverse as possible.
Okay, thank you. I find putting diversity before expertise and willingness to work is really problematic. That's I'll just go on the record. I'm not going to go any further on that. I'll point out there's another phase that we've eliminated, and that is determining or even privately determining, as I believe was the case in the last review, how many from each ACSO. So there was already a filter, a triage done, even before applications were accepted in the previous reviews. And, you know, that has interesting implications. For instance, I don't believe at large participated in the SSR review. I may be wrong, but I don't think we did. And if we didn't, that was with our agreement. It wasn't, you know, something that we said we had to. I believe the GNSO is the only group that has ever had participation in line with their organization. For instance, the at-large has only had one or two members on each review, even though we have five natural, you know, subdivisions. So I think it is really problematic to say anything near five for each ACSO. I'd like to see it much, much lower. The participant concept may well solve the problem. There's typically a lot of travel involved in some of these reviews, and I don't want to see membership being, you know, a token present to reward people, and it comes close to that if we put diversity first and not have a reasonable restriction on the number. So I have a real problem with five. I would much prefer to see a much lower number, and then some level of triage and Greg suggested the chairs, that may be problematic because every chair may be, have to defend to the death their particular group. But I think we have some work to do on this one.
Alan, my proposal was not limited. Aubrey's proposal is three per review, three per ACSO. So five isn't even on the table there. Are you suggesting that as a third alternative?
Well, five was in a document that was sent out on email, I believe. It may not have gotten into the actual document, but I think there was. I think there was a statement saying that they should have the same number of seats as they have votes in the nominal community council.
All right, let's go to Greg.
Thanks. I'll try to keep it brief since I haven't been all that brief in the email list. But I do take the point that expertise and willingness to work, I think, need to be paramount in this, and I have no interest in bloating these teams. It was really the suggestion that we follow the community council, which itself is up for discussion, as the model that piqued my interest. I think that if we you look back at what I think it's been kind of 2-2-2-1-1-1 or something like that, but it's, as you say, it has not been rigidly defined in the past, and there's been at least room for groups to either have more or less people. I just think that to the extent that if we are really trying to be representative of stakeholder entities or stakeholder groups with a small s and a small g, we can't kid ourselves and say that having a seat for the commercial stakeholder group really brings in the voices that need to be brought in if that's what we're trying to do. If we're not trying to be representative, and if we're trying to put together a team that is going to try to in turn create a broadly representative process through interviews, through other contacts and the like, then my concerns are significantly lessened. But a lot of this has to do with whether what we're trying to create is a representative group or not. And if we are not trying to create a representative group per se, although obviously it can't be just 9 GAC members or something, and I'm not picking the GAC for any reason particularly, then I think that we need to kind of focus on what our goals are here. And if our goals are representation by origin, then we need to, however you define that, then we have one set of principles we need to deal with. Frankly, we may be better off either keeping things loose as they were up to this point or being more specifically not attempting to kind of create a house of representatives. Because if there is, then we have to revisit the whole issue of what does representation mean. And maybe I do believe we need to revisit that with regard to the community council. I don't necessarily think we need to revisit it or visit it at all with regard to the AOC or what were the AOC review teams. And I do take Alan's point that in the past, these have worked or haven't worked to the extent that people have been willing to work and have had the necessary expertise and not because they came from some particular node of the ICANN universe. Thanks.
Greg, this is Steve. I do want to note the fact that the affirmation allowed the board chair and the GAC chair to choose the applicants from the community who were on the review teams. So they played the role of sorting it out. It wasn't as if we all worked it out together in a kumbaya fashion. Our proposal does no longer have the board and GAC chair select the applicants to the teams. And instead, we allow this to be like a cross-community working group where the communities themselves specify the people involved. When we do that, I think we're going to have to account for the fact that if we get a lot of volunteers on an issue that's vital to the interests of the GNSO, a lot of volunteers with tremendous expertise and perhaps even a bit of diversity, are we going to turn them away or accommodate them without turning the voting into something that's lopsided. And that is why I proposed an open process, like a cross-community working group, but one that could not be swamped by participants from one group. That's the red text. I don't think that leaving it silent is the status quo, because the status quo involves the GAC and the board chair making the call. They're not there to make the call. That's not an option on the table right now. If you want to bring it back, we can discuss that, but it's not part of this. Greg, your hand is still up. Did you want to come back on that?
Just briefly, I would not propose necessarily bringing back the board chair, GAC chair concept. But I do think that if we have issues with the CCWG methodology for the same reason, again, you know, to the extent that's solved through participants being freely allowed in addition to members, that's one thing. I'm only a participant in the accountability group. As is Jonathan Zuck. Both of us come from the IPC, but with different backgrounds. In any case, how we do this, I think, you know, still implicates, you know, issues of representation. And maybe there is no easy answer to that. Not sure I have a magic answer other than the sorting hat, which unfortunately is only fictional. Thanks.
Thank you, Greg. Thomas, I noticed, Thomas Schneider, what you put in the chat is that some GAC members signaled in Buenos Aires that they would want the GAC to continue to have a role in the selection of the review team. In the public comments that we've received, Thomas, a couple of governments indicated the GAC wanted to participate in the review teams. And to that, we would answer, well, of course, the GAC is included among the ACs and SOs that would participate. So they would be among those who could join. But our current proposal is no longer to have the GAC and the board pick the people that get selected. If that's something that the GAC wants, Thomas, let us know. And if those GAC members feel that way, they should quickly let us know, since that wasn't reflected in the public comment. I think Jordan's right. We're probably going to have to bring this back for further discussion. But I'm hard-pressed to know what to change in the document. It's as if the red and the blue text is still there for consideration, but we haven't figured out the will of this subgroup on WP1, let alone the will of the whole CCWG. So we'll cut off the discussion here, and I'll turn the meeting back over to Jordan because he wants to cover some all other business. But thanks, everyone.
Thank you, Steve, and all. I think it's a shame that we didn't get to this early enough to resolve it, but that's the way it flowed, so that's where we are. The only other thing that I need to cover with you all before the cutoff of this call in about 10 minutes is just the status of our work. I've sent a few emails looking for volunteers, and that has led to people volunteering, which is really encouraging. And so as we've had the discussion already in terms of the power, the EOC incorporation that Stephen Albury has led, so we've worked through that one. We've got a mix of volunteers looking at the balance of power of votes in the community mechanism and whether that's a council or a vote-counting mechanism. And that's Greg and Alan volunteered for both of those things, and Robin volunteered for the balance of power of votes. We've got Jonathan, who volunteered to look at the community power on budget and strategic planning. We've got no hands up in particular for the rest of those community powers. I can do the bylaws ones, but I can't do them for our calls this week. I can only do them for the call on next week. And in terms of removal of individual directors, the recall of the whole ICANN board, we don't yet have volunteers. Though I do have an email in my inbox from Keith Drazak offering to help, and I know that Matthew Shears had promised to help. So really, the question is whether anyone on the call tonight wants to volunteer for any remaining gaps. And Alan, you're volunteering for the removal of individual board members, so thank you for that. Does anyone else want to pick up any other pieces of work? And I'll let you mull on that just as I talk about the next calls, agendas that we've got. Alan, go ahead.
I'll restate something I said and was told it was not never going to happen, but I'll say it anyway. I personally don't think removing all the board members is a necessary requirement, because by being able to remove them one by one, we have the net equivalent effect, and it gives us some level of specificity. But I'm told that would never be accepted, so I'll withdraw the statement. But I wanted to remind people of it.
I think the problem is, Alan, that it receives strong endorsement in the public comments, and so we're not really in a mode of removing powers that we've suggested.
I understand.
So, Robin, so can I be really clear here, folks? There are no email lists. There is nothing other than your will to work together and make this work happen. So, Robin, it isn't the case of adding you to a group. I haven't seen any discussion. I don't expect to be involved in these discussions by email. I do expect things to pop back up onto the list. So all I can do in terms of creating these groups is list your names beside these things as I circulate the list of people who have volunteered. So Robin, Alan, Greg, I really suggest, I hope that you are now underway already with some of the discussion about how to review that text. Because when you go to consider our list of calls, which we've got in front of us. I'm just trying to find Adam's email. And I'm apologizing, but I've managed to lose his call schedule. Yeah, so the call that we've got on Wednesday was intended, I think, to look at the community powers in some detail, but that relies on people having done the work. So, Alan, Robin, I've now managed to lose you now.
Greg?
I'm having a wee computer meltdown at the moment, which is not helping at all. We have a call on Wednesday, and we have a call on Friday, and then we have a call on Monday. So we've got three calls to deal with all the community powers and the issues of the community mechanism and stuff. So I don't mind which order we do it in, but it does require content to be circulated, preferably 24 hours, and if not, at least 12 hours before the call. So really it's a case of how far have people got with the work. Avery, I see that your hand is up. Please go ahead.
Yeah, my hand was still up from the discussion on board members. And all I wanted to do is add the caution that for those working on it, we had both the issues on getting rid of the full, and we also have to answer and respond to various issues that came out on why it is that reusing the individuals doesn't make them responsive to the wrong kind of things that some comments came out with. And that was all I wanted to bring up, that we had to deal with the issues against dealing with both of them. Thanks.
Thanks, Avery. We have to deal with all of the issues that came up in the public comment. So, Alan, Greg, Robin, do you think you might be in a position to present some updated text for us on Wednesday about the community mechanism, the balance of voting, and the, whether it's a council or just a voting counting mechanism?
We can try.
I agree with Alan in that sense.
John, is it just the two of us on that one, or is it Robin also?
It's Robin as well.
Okay. I would suggest we can get together for an hour or so, at least an hour or so, on a Skype call or something like that. I think that may be more productive to try to tick off things we can easily agree on and that fit the comments than trying to do it only on email. But we can
yeah.
We'll arrange that among ourselves.
Okay, that would be really good. So so in that case, we'll close this call by scheduling for the Wednesday call, which is Wednesday, 1800 hours UTC, that discussion. And then on Friday, the 10th of July at 1900 UTC, we'll deal with the first set of community powers, the work that Jonathan has volunteered to do, and hopefully I'll volunteer Matthew and Keith to do Matthew or Keith to do the recalling the whole ICANN board. And so we'll do recall of individual board members, budget and strategic plan, and recalling the whole ICANN board. And then maybe on Friday's call we can do maybe on Monday's call we can then do the bylaws and then before the Paris freeze. So just to remind again, what you're doing is presenting a document, hopefully that looks a little bit like the one that Steve has worked through with us today. And I see Keith is typing. Hopefully it's to volunteer to deal with the ICANN board one. Thank you. Alan, your hand is up.
Yeah, if I could just ask Robin and Greg, I've got to run out for a few hours now. Perhaps one of you can put an email out suggesting some times to talk tomorrow. And I would guess we should all try to do our homework and look at the comments before then. Thank you.
Fantastic, thanks. And if bits of the work become unworkable, we do have that Monday call as a little bit of a reserve. I don't think we can do anything after that, so we shouldn't treat it as such. But to me, it feels like some of the more tricky items will be dealt with this week. So I think on that note, we'll close this call. Thanks to you all for your participation. And I'll circulate just in about 6 hours an updated list of volunteers for the record. Thanks, everyone.
And thank you, Jordan, for pushing us along.